If you're ready to take your life and business to the next level, join Brother Bedford as he brings you the most inspiring and motivating stories and lessons from today's top black millionaire entrepreneurs.
Greetings, everyone. This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to our next episode of Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. I'm extremely, extremely excited today because we have a rare opportunity to speak to someone who not only has a rich entrepreneurial history, but he has tremendous insight into so many industries and the different types of businesses that entrepreneurs and business owners are involved in. And so I'm really excited about this because I think what will be shared today will be able to help so many of us as black entrepreneurs in whatever category, industry, or niche that we're in, because we have someone who's going to give us some insight who's dealing with just about every category, industry, or niche. So without further delay, I want to welcome to the call the president and CEO of the U.S. Black Chamber, Mr. Ron Busby. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show this morning.
No, thank you so much for giving us your time to share of your expertise to help us grow as entrepreneurs. Now, I have a long list of things that I could begin to read off in terms of your biography and the many things that you've done, but can you just tell our audience, who is Ron Busby?
Oh, wow. Well, again, I appreciate the opportunity to tell a little bit about my story, about my organization, as well as opportunities for your listeners across the country. So, again, my name is Ron Busby, Senior President and CEO of the U.S. Black Chambers, Inc. We're a nonprofit organization headquartered here in Washington, D.C., with 116 chapters located across the country in 26 states and a membership base of over 240,000 black-owned businesses. That's kind of where I am today. I guess to really appreciate that, I guess you kind of got to go back a few years. Born in Houston, Texas, grew up in Oakland, where I was blessed to have a mother that was an educator as well as a minister. So we grew up in the books, both from a historical perspective as well as an academic perspective. Then from there, my father was a Black Panther as well as an entrepreneur, so we also understood the importance of Black community and supporting each other, as well as not really taking a lot of stuff from the system. Had the opportunity to go off to college, where I attended Florida A&M undergrad, an HBCU, and then was blessed to go to a graduate school, Clarkland University in Atlanta. So both those were great opportunities to be around some young, talented African Americans from all over the country, bringing great ideas and energy about how we were going to really attack the future for black folk as it related to business and opportunity. After college, I went to work in corporate America, and during those years, it was open for young blacks to go into corporate America because of many of their diversity programs. And we know that those days have changed, but I was had the opportunity to work at several of the top 100 firms, Fortune 100 firms, including IBM, Xerox. Was a vice president at Coca-Cola, so really understood from a corporate perspective what their needs were, how to work within the system, but also still have our individuality. From there, really was looking at going into business for myself. Had the my 27 years old, had the opportunity to go to work for Coca-Cola, and I remember I was a guy that didn't mind coming to work at 7 a.m. and didn't mind leaving at 7 p.m. And about 6 months into it, they called me into the office and they said, "We want you to go and report to Joe. Joe's going to kind of work with you." And so worked a lot with Joe. Joe was an older white guy, about 56, my age right now, ironically. And Joe would come to work every morning at 9 and leave each evening at 5. He understood his customer base. He understood the system. And about 4 months later, they came in and said, "We want you to move your things into Joe's office." And I was like, "Well, where's Joe going?" They said, "Well, Joe's going to be reporting to you." And at that moment, I decided I had to have an exit strategy. I didn't want to be 56 years old reporting to some 27-year-old who just didn't mind working a few more hours. And so I looked around America and saw that some of the wealthiest people that I was seeing were into their own business for themselves. And so I looked at going into business for myself. Our family had a janitorial service, 5 employees, my mother, my father, my 2 sisters, and I. Pretty much our entire young lives. And so I left corporate America and really went to go work for McDonald's to understand their system and how they really operated, because the same French fry you get in San Antonio, you get in Seattle, or you get in Singapore. So we really concentrated on having a system as we rolled out the business that I got into, and went back home. I tell the story, I went back home to the same bunk bed I had when I was in the 3rd grade and started working with my father to grow that firm from 5 employees to 700 employees, from $150,000 in annualized revenue to over $22 million in annualized revenue. We were the largest black janitorial service in the country. So most of the entrepreneurial experiences, I had the opportunity to go through them, some successfully, some not so successfully, but as most entrepreneurs will tell you, you truly learn in the fire. And so many of those experiences I have brought over into what I'm doing today. I grew up, again, I grew my first firm to quite a large firm, but in the process of that, I ended up losing my wife, sold that firm, and so moved to Phoenix, started a second firm. Me and my 2 sons, I guess you could say they were very young, raised them and got involved in the Chamber of Commerce, the Black Chamber of Commerce there. Really had a great experience and had the opportunity to be the founder and president of the U.S. Black Chambers in Washington, D.C. So I feel like I bring a corporate experience, an entrepreneurial experience, and a local chamber perspective to what I do here in Washington, D.C. And so with that, I'm open to talk about the U.S. Black Chamber and the things that we do, and hopefully your audience will have a chamber in their local community or at least want to find out more about us. We're based on 5 pillars. First one being advocacy. What we noticed in Washington, D.C., it's not really based on a Republican agenda or a Democratic agenda, because they change consistently here in Washington, D.C. It's not a black or white issue here in D.C. It's really about a representation issue. And for those of us that live and work in Washington, D.C., you'll see on the back of each tag license plate, it says taxation without representation. And for so long, that's been black businesses. We have been paying into the system. We just have not had real advocacy, a real voice here in Washington, D.C., speaking on our behalf as legislation is being developed as well as implemented across the country. It's one thing to vote. It's another thing to get elected officials in office. But really to be able to have a change, you have to have a consistent voice at the table years and years out, making sure that your issues are being addressed. And so that's the first thing that the U.S. Black Chamber does. Our second one is access to capital. If you ask any small business owner in America what their number one concern is, they will say having the necessary dollars to start, to grow and expand their businesses. And so we have taken on an aggressive role in creating different avenues for our businesses to get access to capital. We have created microloan programs in many of our chambers across the country so that now business owners that are members of our chamber can go to those chambers and get the small business loans that they need to start and grow their businesses. Mm-hmm. We also
– go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, I said that's powerful, because I know in my organization I get that question often. I'm looking for funds to start my business, so I can't wait to share with everyone the opportunities that the chamber offers as it relates to access to capital.
Yeah, there are other things that we've done behind the scenes in 2011, the president came out. Many African-American firms that had been successful got that way through government contracts. We know that the government spends trillions of dollars each year, and they're the biggest consumer in the country, especially for small and diverse businesses. But we also know that the government is notorious for paying late. You could get a contract January 1st, and many cases may not get paid until June. And for a small business owner, we just don't have the leverage to be able to carry that float. And so we advocated on behalf of our members across the country and were influential in having the government change its pay cycle. And the president came out and created and implemented the quick pay program. So now you get a contract January 1st, you invoice January 30th, you get paid by February 15th. That's a game changer for many small, primarily black-owned businesses to be able to get their money in net 15 versus, you know, in many cases, net 120 days. It's just a game changer that has allowed many of our businesses to now grow at a much quicker rate. Our third pillar is really contracting. Again, we see here in Washington, D.C., what happens to many of the big contractors. You know, black firms, small firms are notorious for, you know, cutting out all the profit, cutting down trees to make the necessary reams of paper that they have to submit, praying over them, you know, putting hands on them, doing all the things that they feel will be necessary to get a contract. And many times it's not even about that. It really is about someone knowing someone in the decision-making cycle that will advocate for your business or represent your firm. And so we have been instrumental in getting many of our businesses through some of the red tape here and helping them grow and find out about opportunities, which we've normally not known. But we also say that of the 1.9 million African-American businesses in the country, 1.8 million have no employees. Mm-hmm. So it really is about small businesses doing business with other small businesses and other black consumers in the country. Mm-hmm. We all hear about the $1 trillion that we have in spend power, but we have to be more assertive in how we're using and spending those dollars. I say a lot of times, you know, the Asian community's dollar stays within their community 28 days before it leaves. The Hispanic community dollar stays in their community 21 days before it leaves. The African-American dollar leaves within the first 6 hours of us getting it. Mm. We're getting our checks, cashing them, and running out of our community to try to spend our dollar. We have to do better. And so we've created a mobile app called the USBC mobile app. You can download it for free on any cell phone, any Android, I should say, or iPhone. It's a mobile app with 41,000 black-owned businesses that are already listed. It's GPS-driven, so when you're looking to spend your dollars, if you're looking for, hey, I'm looking for a black-owned bakery, I'm looking for a black-owned dry cleaner, I'm looking for a black-owned franchise, it will give you the closest one to you based upon where you are currently located and will also give you additional information. We feel like if you could, the average African-American currently spends 3% of their dollars with black businesses. If we could increase that just to 10%, we would be able to hire 1 million additional African-Americans. Right. In this country right now, there are 1.9 million African-American-owned businesses and 1.9 million unemployed African-Americans. If we could get each small business to just hire one person in our community, we would not have an unemployment issue across the country for black folk. We can control that. But it starts with us spending our money with us. Our fourth pillar is entrepreneurial training. And we have online classes currently as well as classes at our chamber offices. We're creating one, a new one that will be run and managed through us by the University of Phoenix. And then last is our chamber development. Once a year, we bring all of our chamber presidents to Washington, D.C., Next year, it'll be July the 28th through August the 1st. It's 3.5 days, training them on all the resources, developing new relationships for them. The second day, we bring in the top 100 black-owned businesses from across the country so that they also get the skills and resources that they need. It's called our School of Chamber and Business Management. On that Friday, we do a White House visit and meet with highly elected officials and government agency. And it really gives us an opportunity to discuss our agenda from a business perspective with this administration, as well as Department of Commerce and Congressional Black Caucus and other great individuals here in Washington.
Now, what is the date for that again?
It'll be in 2015. It's at the Marriott Marquis, which is a black-owned hotel. It's the date July 28th through August the 1st.
Okay, great. I want to make sure we put that on the page as well when we release this. Now, man, you covered so much, and I want to come back to the chamber. There was one question in the third pillar that I wanted to ask you about when you mentioned that directory that comes from the app. Is that something, that directory, is that compiled from the members of the chamber? Is that how that directory is compiled?
Any business, black-owned business, can submit their information to the U.S. Black Chamber. You can go to our website, www.usblackchambers.org. Again, www.usblackchambers.org. You can input your information. It'll give you your information, how to input your information in there. We verify that it's black-owned, that it is a brick-and-mortar or an online business, and we'll list it in that directory that way.
Oh, man, that's great. That's great. A lot of people are going to be excited to hear that. Now, before we get, because there's some things, we just want to drive people to join the chamber and get involved, whether locally or whatever they need to do online. But before you give that information, I just had a couple other questions I wanted to ask you. You mentioned you going into McDonald's. Now, you said that you had already decided to become an entrepreneur and build the business or begin to work in your family business. What compelled you to, after making the decision, or what was your mindset, I should say? You made the decision to go into business for yourself, but yet you went to work at McDonald's to learn systems. What was the mindset behind that?
Well, I felt like in small business, I felt like I had a good understanding of corporate America. And in corporate America, first day of the year, they'll give you, here is the mission for the year, and each quarter they'll give you the goals for the quarter, and each month they'll give you your objectives and to get you your weekly sales review. I mean, you're being monitored each and every step of the way, so there's a guide for you. As an entrepreneur, you usually don't have that guide, and I can see, especially in a service industry, no disrespect, but my father was Willie Busby. And I could see clients either saying, we can go with Willie, who was an old black guy working, mop and bucket. We could go with many of our Hispanic brothers and sisters who have labor businesses, or they could go with this corporate young guy who really understood some of the challenges that they had. It was up to us as a small business to really have systems put in place so that we would not have to manage employees, because I felt like the largest problem that many service businesses have, small businesses especially, they grow out of business because they're growing too fast if they're successful. And in a service industry like ours, where you are really managing people, I wanted to be able to rest peacefully, understanding that we had created a system that was going to be managed versus managing individuals or people, which provide many challenges for a small or, in our particular case, a service-oriented business. And McDonald's has one of the best programs created that I had seen. And for us, at Coca-Cola, it was one of the successful models that were out there. And so I really wanted to understand that, how it was being implemented across not just in the country, but across the world.
So it was key to understand the importance of systems and how they operated to grow your businesses.
Yeah, so many of us work in our businesses versus working on our businesses that we just get caught up in putting out the day-to-day fires as opposed to really trying to build, you know, an exit strategy or a sustainable business so that we can have the time to think about growing that small firm.
Man, that's great. That's great. Now, you mentioned some challenges that many of us face. And, I mean, it's clear you went from working in corporate America, beginning your short stint with McDonald's to, for educational purpose, almost like you went to school for a third time.
It was just 6 months.
Yeah, so you took that skill set. Now you took that to your business and you grew it to millions of dollars. And you did it twice. You did it not only with the family business, but then once you relocated, you grew, started that business from scratch and grew that to millions of dollars. So my question is, in those phases, those startup phases, what were the major challenges that you faced in your particular business?
Well, I think part of what we were able to do, or what I was able to do, is my father had been in business since 1974. I came and got involved in 1989. So I was able to use the legacy that he had. So it wasn't like I was a brand new business, even though we were basically a brand new business when I came to get involved. But I was able to use that history to be able to say, look, we've been in business for 15 years already. We're just ready to go to that next level. But I think still having to compete in an industry where it's a low-level entry level, so anybody can kind of get into the business, you had to create a differentiator between you and everyone else that was in the business. And so that was a challenge that we really worked on. And then secondly, as most small business owners will tell you, access to capital was huge. You know, when I left corporate America, I had some money. I made a really bad decision, business decision. I thought I was buying into kind of a franchise operation, and I was going to, you know, have access to that opportunity when I got there. And by the time I left my McDonald's experience and went back home, that business had gone out of business. So I, you know, my money was gone, and there was really nothing I could do. But what they did provide me was all of their files and data and information, and I was able to live off of that information and to grow my firm for the next 2 to 3 years. I had a strategy going in that I was going to double our annual revenue each year. It wasn't that difficult at first. Like I said, we were a $150,000 firm to grow to $300,000. To go to $300,000 to really go to like $750,000 meant that I had to do a lot of sales calls. To go from 750 to 1.5 meant that I had to go after a different kind of customer set. We were starting to call on large buildings. To go from 1.5 to 3 million, I now started going after government and federal buildings. And then to go from 3.5 or 3 million to 7 million, I ended up becoming 8A certified. So we went after large government bases across the country. So literally the day before we were 8A certified, we were bidding on jobs in the thousands of dollars. The day after we became 8A certified, we were bidding on jobs in the millions of dollars. Wow. And then I got to 7 million, and I really didn't know how I was going to double my next year. And I ended up being blessed to read a book about a gentleman that lives in Maryland called Reginald Lewis. The name of the book was Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? And it really changed my perspective. I spent the next 6 months after that really looking at how I was going to buy a firm. We were headquartered in Oakland, California, and during that time, that was the boom of the Silicon Valley. But they weren't letting African-American firms play in that industry. They just weren't really giving us much opportunity, even though I had worked at IBM and Xerox. So I understood the industry. They just weren't giving contracts to minority and black firms. If you have heard what's going on with Google now, that's not new. It was even that much harder then. And so I spent 6 months looking for and understanding the right kind of firm. I located that firm, and I studied everything I could about that firm. I knew more about that company's employees, their customers, their vendors, their suppliers, their bankers. I knew their strengths and weaknesses. I knew all about the guys, and was able, after a lot of due diligence, to be able to make an offer, and ended up being able to buy that firm and grew our firm from $7 million. They were about a $7.5 million firm, to about $15 million. So then we ended up doubling that year again. But each year there was a different unique challenge that came along with that growth.
Wow. In that earlier, you mentioned earlier the differentiation piece from the other businesses, since it was a crowded market, if you will, if that's a good way to say that so many people could get into the industry. How did you differentiate your company from so many that look like you, or businesses that look like you?
I was able to articulate the systems that we were creating that I had learned from McDonald's. So I had basically taken the McDonald's model, put a janitorial spin on it, and was able to put our corporate look and feel on our proposals. So it gave us a big company look and smell with a real developed model, with a company that had 15 years experience, even though we had just, I had just began.
So really you took what was already existing and as you mentioned, put some polish on it to really separate yourself from the businesses who hadn't begun to understand how important the packaging was to market that business.
Yeah.
Okay, man, that's good stuff. And then I like the part you mentioned about acquisition, being able to grow your business or double the business by strategically looking for a company to acquire. Now, was that business already, I know you said you bidded on it, because I know so many people are looking to think about growing their businesses, but that's something in the African-American community that is, as you mentioned, Reginald Lewis, obviously, I find myself struggling now to try to introduce Reginald Lewis to the African-American community. Many of us don't even know much about him. But that whole strategy of acquisition, how viable is that for entrepreneurs that are, I guess, in the 6 to 7 figure range today?
Well, from the U.S. Black Chamber's perspective, what we find is that corporate America, as well as government agencies, no longer have the ability to spend the amount of time to find a good small company, especially a good small minority company. There's no benefit. When I was at IBM, I used to tell my decision makers, you'll never get fired by making a decision to buy my product, but you will get scrutinized and potentially fired if you make a decision not to go with me, because I'm the safe decision. Well, in today's market, decision makers no longer can afford to make the decision to go with the small black firm. There's no benefit. There's no attaboys. There's no accolades. There's no measurements. There's no quotas. There's no goals. And it takes a lot of time to find that small guy. And so now the number one concern we hear is size and scale. Ron, your businesses are too small, and they don't have the scale, because they no longer are debundling contracts. They're taking large contracts and awarding them, because it used to be they would take a large contract and slice it up so that small businesses could compete. But now they have so much work to do that they can no longer afford to have the staff to be able to go through to make the small purchases. And so they're putting them all in large contracts. And most small businesses, like I said, of the 1.9 million black firms, only 106,000 of them have employees. Most of them are doing less than $150,000. So we're not going to get there organically anymore. The years of being able to grow your business organically year by year are just going to be that much more difficult. So the only way we're going to be able to get there as a business community is through mergers. So we got to do some partnering, some consortiums work. But I think we got to do more acquisitions. We got to get in. We got to find a competitor. We got to find a good source of revenue, and we got to go buy some of these firms. There's a lot of senior citizens that have good businesses that are looking to figure out what their exit strategy is, and they're looking for us. So many of us want to go into business for ourselves, but we really need to find out what's the right business, and we need to find it. I guarantee you there's probably somebody out there already doing it.
It already has that built business already built.
Yeah, already got it built. We just need to go, and many of us don't have the resources to start effectively, so let's go do some volunteer work. Let's go work for the firm. Let's go, you know, bring our resources and skill to that company, and then make a plan to join ownership or acquire it in the future. But we can't get there, you know, growing at the paces that we're growing currently. We've got to be creative.
That is powerful. That is information that I'll make sure that I amplify, that people need to tune into this this episode just to hear that portion, because, again, that conversation is not being had. Everyone that, well, and I wouldn't say everyone, but the majority, as you mentioned, of entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs that I encounter, everyone is striving doubly hard to organically grow their businesses. And you're right. The report is that it is a struggle. So for you to mention that strategy, what are the traits or characteristics that one must have in order to embrace that type of model to go into acquisitions or strategic alliances and partnerships?
I think after you bumped your head a couple of times against large competitors, and understand large competitors didn't get there on their own. The days of the Walmarts of the world growing, just not there. And so your competitors are going in, bidding on small contracts that they used to see, only a small businesses that were in there. Well, many times I think after we have hit our head a couple times, we're going to look for, okay, I have to have a new strategy. And I would just tell African Americans that are listening to make sure that they're looking around the room and they're seeing other firms that look like them, and say, let's get together. 50% of a dollar is a lot better than, 0% of it. And I think as companies look at us, they see the value in two small firms or three small firms coming together, bringing their resources, and it makes it easier for them. There's a lot less liability on the one firm. Banks look at that from a different perspective as well. I just think we have to start looking creatively at what we're doing as small business owners.
Man, this is great. I could ask you questions all day. I mean, I just love the breadth of knowledge that you bring to the table. Again, just your experience, the corporate experience, your educational background, building a business from scratch, growing a firm, and now having so much insight into just the whole concept of linking to government. I mean, the wealth of knowledge that you have is just profound. And I wish we had all day to do a Q&A session, but I know time is the essence. So quickly, can you tell us, how can people get in contact with the chamber? What should we do? What are our marching orders for connecting with the U.S. Black Chamber?
Great question. I would ask each of your listeners, and not just your listeners, but your listeners' friends as well. In 2015, we have got to get engaged. We have got to support each other. We're our solution. And so I ask each of you to go and visit our website, www.usblackchambers.org. Again, www.usblackchambers.org. Each day we post contract opportunities, job opportunities, entrepreneurial tips and contract tips and contract opportunities every day. Like us on Facebook and follow us on our Twitter USBC 1. We'd love to share our information and have you become a member. You can become a member of your local chamber in your local community, and if there's not one there, we'd love to have your support here in Washington, D.C. Again, www.usblackchambers.org.
Man, Mr. Busby, this has been a wonderful call. Thank you for sharing your time with us this morning. And, again, I look forward to supporting you and the chamber. You know, we have a mutual friend in Mr. Michael Grant, and so, of course, whatever I can do to help support and push our involvement in the chamber and what it is that you offer, I will do that.
Well, thank you. Thank you to your listeners as well. And in reference to that, I tell people to do a couple things that they can do this year. They can download the mobile app so they can start spending more money with black businesses. They can subscribe to a black newspaper or to a black print publication, and they can put some money in a black bank. Those are three things that as a community we should be doing on an annual basis. But as we start and prepare for 2015 New Year, I would make sure that we do that along with joining your local black chamber. Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Same you too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother. That's the keyword. My brother to 58885. Just text the keyword my brother to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.